Be opening up your Bibles, if you would, to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, we'll start our study in that text this evening. When you think about one of the things that the gospel does, the gospel calls us to a higher standard. In Matthew chapter 5, that's the first portion of the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus gives as he talks and helps prepare the minds of his would-be followers for the kingdom of heaven. And he talks a little bit about kingdom citizenship behavior. And deals with some of the misunderstandings that many of the Jews during that time had. That was simple obedience to the law was really all that God was looking for. And we looked at a couple of those last Sunday morning. We looked at how Jesus helped them understand what God intended when he said, "Do not murder and do not commit adultery." And as he carried those out to really obedience that begins in the heart and then manifests itself outward. But it calls us, the gospel does, to a higher way of living. Let's pick up our reading in Matthew chapter 5. Let's start in verse 38 and read along to the end of the chapter. Jesus says there, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go with him 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. You've heard it said that you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Verse 39, Jesus calls us to act in such a way
above the normal human instinctive response to people that mistreat us, to our enemies.
And he sets this higher moral ethical standard for society here in this passage.
And verses 41 and 42 are really where we want to take the basis of our lesson from this evening. This part where Jesus says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever forces you to go with him 1 mile, go with him too. You'll remember, and you probably all heard, that during the days of Jesus, as Rome was the ruling empire, it was the legal right of their soldiers to compel you to perform certain menial tasks. If they had need of one of your beasts of burden, then it was their right by law to take use of that for a period of time. They could compel you to travel 1 mile with them as some means of a transport. You'll remember and call to mind at Jesus' crucifixion how when Jesus falls down and he can't carry his cross any longer, they take Simon the Cyrenian and they enact that right as they had as a Roman soldier to compel him to bear the cross of Jesus. And so Roman soldiers could compel people who were under their authority to travel with them for a period of time. And these people were hated by the Jews. But Jesus, as he's talking about enemies and people that mistreat us, he says here in verses 41 and 42, if one of those Roman soldiers were to come along and were to compel you by law to travel with them for a period of time, go above and beyond what it was they may ask you to do. And of course, that first mile oftentimes would have been done very grudgingly. It would have been done because they had to, not because they wanted to. But Jesus commands citizens of God's kingdom to be able to go beyond what was expected. I think we really, as so many people seek for happiness, one of the many things and one of the many attitudes that helps us really achieve happiness in this life is developing this mentality of going the second mile. And we understand what that concept means. If you're at work and as an employee you go the second mile, perhaps your job has an expectation or your boss has an expectation of you, but you go above and beyond the call of duty. You give more than what is expected of you to your job. That's the concept of going the second mile. Well, we want to take this concept and we want to get to the heart of what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount. We want to talk about Christianity, the responsibilities that we have in service to God, and understand it perhaps, or look at it perhaps, as being one who's willing to go above and beyond the normal call of duty. We oftentimes want to restrict religion, that is faith, to the things that take place here in this building. Our worship, our singing, our giving, the Lord's Supper, our prayers, all of those things, that consist of religion, we take and we confine them to this one area. However, as we read about Jesus' helping the understanding of the people go beyond what was perhaps the normal perception of the day, we have to understand that our faith doesn't just permeate the things that we do while we are here and the acts of worship that we go through while we are here, but that it actually permeates or is to permeate every aspect of our life. This evening we want to look at this concept of second mile Christianity and three areas in which it is to work and be evident in our life. And the first here is just within the home. All of us here have family members. Some of us may have both parents in the home. Some of us may have one parent in the home. Some of us may be on our own. And regardless of the relationship or the circumstance you find yourself in, the Bible gives insight and gives wisdom as to the expectations of the various roles of those who are within a family. Let's just start with the husbands. This always seems to be the husbands first, doesn't it? Go over to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. You know, if you think about the responsibility of the husband, and maybe if husbands were asked or all polled and asked this question, what do you think it is? What is your expectation? What does God expect for you as a husband? Especially in relation to your wife. First thing that probably comes to mind, that role of headship, that role of authority, that role of being the spiritual leader. And let me say, the generations of the past, many of them, by and large, the perception of, even within the church, many people, was the head husband was to rule the home. He was to rule his family and his wife with an iron fist. But let me say, I don't know where that perception came from, and if many people believe, well, that's the expectation of the Christian husband, you need to read some of these passages that talk about the husband's role. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 really helps us understand and branches out. We think about second mile Christianity goes beyond the normal expectation of the husband's role toward his wife. Peter instructs husbands, he says, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir in the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. Did you hear Peter's instruction there? It wasn't husbands rule your home with an iron fist and be the authoritative leader that God expects you to be. He expects husbands to do something very challenging. I think probably most of us husbands will say, dwell with your wives with understanding. Well, what exactly does that entail? You need to know a little bit about her. You need to know a little bit about the way that God made her. As some of the other translations describe her, she is the weaker vessel. Well, what sense, we don't want to argue necessarily what exactly that weaker vessel may be, but we do understand that emotionally that she needs to be handled differently. You can't treat her like one of your buddies if there's troubles in the marriage. You can't just necessarily bring it out and deal with it like you might deal with a problem you and your brother are having. So you've got to show her honor and show her respect as the weaker vessel. And Paul, in Ephesians chapter 5, it gives us a little bit of insight as to how husbands are to deal with their wife. Go ahead and turn over there. We'll be looking at several passages from Ephesians 5 and 6 in the upcoming moments. But Paul, as he gives instructions to husbands, he says, husbands ought to also love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. Sometimes it's harder for us men, us guys, us husbands, to get in touch with maybe the softer, gentler emotions of our relationship. And well, stereotypically, a man can't demonstrate these various aspects that Paul is describing here. But as he speaks of these terms, and as he dictates how a husband is to deal with his wife, he uses terms of tenderness and endearment. He says that he is to nourish her, and he is to cherish her. Let me ask you this question. Husbands, what if Jesus was a husband to his bride? And that's the analogy Paul's making in Ephesians 5. What if Jesus was a husband to his bride the same way that you were a husband to your wife? What would Jesus' ministry have looked like if Jesus lived as a husband or dealt with his bride as you deal with your bride? Do you have compassion? Do you have kindness? Or do you rule with an iron thumb? Do you dictate the commands and you sit in that position of authority and you tell everyone how it's going to be? You think about Jesus' ministry. He demonstrated compassion while he was here on this earth. He demonstrated tenderness. It says as he looked out on his people and he saw the circumstances that they were in, he had compassion on them as they were a sheep without a shepherd. And so he demonstrates love and kindness. And yes, he does exercise his authority and his headship, but he does so and he reconciles it with love and patience and gentleness and kindness. If Jesus was a husband to his bride as you are to yours, would that compassion have been there in his ministry? Would that patience have been there in his ministry? We need to be willing to go the second mile with our wives and follow in the example of Jesus. And chances are, the response will be pretty good. What about wives in dealing with their husbands? What's the expectation of a wife? Well, begrudgingly, we have to say the expectation of a wife is to submit to her husband, at least as this text here describes it. And so maybe the wives are thinking, the expectation for me as a wife, I've got to obey. If I don't like it, maybe I'll pitch a fit. Maybe I'll express my displeasure so very obviously where it can't be missed. Maybe after I submit myself, well, then I'll demonstrate a coldness and I'll punish him by giving him the cold shoulder. However, I'm submitting. I'm doing what the Bible has told me to do. But in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33 is Paul helps us understand second mile Christianity is going beyond what is expected. He says, nevertheless, let each individual among you is to love his own wife even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. So you have there, above and beyond, if you will, the expectation to just be obedient or to submit. And that term submit gets a bad rap. We can't take the time to really look at what biblical submission is. We don't have the time for that, and that's not the purpose of this lesson. But oftentimes that's painted as the primary responsibility of the wife. Well, it goes beyond that. The wife is also to respect her husband. What about if he didn't deserve it? You know, we oftentimes hear that statement. Or maybe some wives have been even guilty of saying, well, he's not going to get my respect until he acts in such a way that he deserves it. Now tell me, where do you read that into the text? Where do you see that the husband has to deserve the respect of the wife before she provides him that respect? Does God command it? Tell you a good example that we may think of is back in the believe it's going to be 1st or 2nd Samuel. You got a woman there, a very wise and discerning woman, as she's described in the text, by Abigail, who is a woman of wisdom and a woman of great beauty. And her husband is an absolutely terrible guy. His name's Nabal. And he treats David, who is the anointed king of Israel, in just a very scornful and unfair way. And it gets to the point, David says, you know, he says to his soldiers, you know, get your swords. We're going to go deal with this guy, Nabal, and give him what he deserves. However, this wife obviously understood to a greater degree, I think, perhaps, than many of us do, the role that she had as her husband's wife. Did he deserve her respect? No. In fact, she says, this guy's a scoundrel. But yet she acted in such a way as to preserve his life because that was her husband. Wives, does your husband deserve your respect? Unfortunately, I've got to say, I haven't always behaved in such a way where I deserved my wife's respect. The second mile of Christianity would dictate that the wife, regardless of how the husband may act, she gives her husband the respect that Paul says she is to give him. You think about the expectation of parents. Well, if I can simply control my kids, that's really all I'm concerned with. Second mile of Christianity determines that we've got to go above and beyond just controlling their kids. And now that I've got them, I can understand the desire to compromise the expectation with your kids. Sometimes if you can just get your kids to act decent, you know, whenever you're out in public and when you go to the store, when you have company over, you'll settle for that and you'll be willing to compromise for just decent, manageable control of your children. But in Ephesians 6:4, Paul goes beyond that. He says, it's not just enough to control them. Don't provoke your children to anger, fathers and mothers, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Now, we understand, oftentimes, teachers perhaps can see this in their children. If the parents at home rule with the iron fist and they exercise that discipline, but there's not a whole lot of that instruction thing going on, then they can see that in their kids. The kids are jumpy, and you can just see the fear that they've got in their eyes if they do something disobedient because they're so used to being punished at home. And yes, discipline is part of raising children, but so is instruction and bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And as parents, we've got to go beyond just settling for the status quo and controlling our children. We've got to provide instruction. We've got to provide discipline. Patience must be demonstrated. Love must be demonstrated. Obedience that comes forth as a result is the product of love rather than fear. And then lastly here, as we think about second mile Christianity within the home, the expectation of the children is to obey. At least, if I just obey, that's good enough. That's what Paul says in Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And so the children are thinking, and maybe as a young child and as a foolish child, I would have thought the same thing. Well, as long as I obey, it's kind of like that submit command. As long as I obey, well, really, that's all that matters. Well, if we think about the Jews, I think sometimes we have more in common with them than we think. They thought if we just simply obey what God has said, then that's all fine and well. We're bringing ourselves in line with what God has commanded. I'm doing what is required. As long as I do what mom or dad tells me to do, that's good enough. I've done what God has commanded of me. Well, look in the second verse that Paul gives as he follows up this command for children to obey their parents. He said there is an attitude that is to go along with that. And that is very relevant in determining whether you truly obey or not. He says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. I can tell you, just being a parent for the short time that I have, and it's a learning experience. You never cease to learn something new. And there are moments where it can get you down, and there are moments where it just can cause your heart to swell up well with pride. Normally in the evenings before we get Annabelle ready for bed, we make her pick up all of her toys in her bedroom and in the living room. And so we'll go through that process, and it has to be repetitive, maybe perhaps just because of her young age. And we have to tell her sometimes multiple times, Annabelle, pick up your toys, Annabelle, pick up your toys. And that training and that instruction will start helping her so she understands what it is we want to do. Well, one evening, I was sitting there on the couch, and it was almost time for bed. She had gotten in her pajamas, and then she just starts saying, pick up. Pick up, and she starts picking up her toys and putting it in there. And I remember my parents, whenever I was growing up, and I was a good bit older than her, thinking back to how my mom expressed appreciation and thanksgiving whenever we as her children would do what we knew she wanted us to do without having to be asked. Sometimes she'd have to tell us. Sometimes she'd have to remind us. But every once in a while, we would just get the foresight, I guess, I don't know, or the motivation, maybe we wanted something, to do what we knew she wanted us to do without her ever having to ask. But that's what the goal is. That's what going above and beyond the expectation is. It's not children and young people that we just obey what mom and dad says, but that our obedience comes not as a result of their command and not as a result of perhaps fear of the punishment, but rather we love mom and dad. And so we want to honor them. We want to respect them. And so that second mile says that I'll do this without having to be asked. And it shows itself in so many ways. But as Christians, as husbands or wives, as parents or children, we need to be willing to go that second mile and apply second mile Christianity within the home. We also need to be willing to apply second mile Christianity in society. You know, our behavior, if someone knows you're a Christian, our behavior stands out to people who are in the world, to people especially that aren't Christians. You know, turn over to Matthew chapter 27. I think we see this in part manifested as Jesus is there on the cross. You know, those centurions, those Roman soldiers, they had to have witnessed and had to be quite hard fellows to have to have done some of the things that they were commanded to do and the expectations that they were commanded to follow through with. I doubt that the centurion that stood at the foot of the cross of Jesus and those two men who were there crucified along with him, I doubt that this was his first rodeo. I can only imagine some of the things that he may have witnessed, having seen criminals who were being put to death for their crimes and their disobedience on these crosses. And even as he witnessed these two criminals that were being put to death beside Jesus, at least both at one point in time were mocking Jesus and were saying, bring yourself off the cross, save yourself and us. And I imagined as he dealt with these people who were really the worst that society probably had to see, he saw quite a bit of hatred and he saw quite a bit of anger. He saw quite a bit of defiance by the people that were being put to death for their disobediences against the Roman Empire or whatever reason. But Jesus, the death that he suffered on the cross was quite different than probably anything else a centurion had ever witnessed. rather than demeaning the people that were around him and demeaning the Roman soldiers that might have been there. And who knows how many threats the centurion himself might have heard, because he was kind of the embodiment of the Roman government that was there mocking them in this last moment of pain and anguish. Who knows how many threats he might have heard from people who were hanging on those crosses that he was standing there beside. But then to look at Jesus as he stood in stark contrast to those two other robbers that were there as sheep that was led to a slaughter. He didn't have a rebellious word, or didn't have any angry response coming forth from him. He just bore it meekly. He went beyond that. He demonstrated a care and a compassion and a love, not just for himself, but for other people that were around him. His statement to his mother and his disciples, and the kindness and the patience that he had to bring one of the thieves to a knowledge of God in his last moment, so much so that it was says, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." As a centurion would have witnessed that, his conclusion after Jesus dies, and yes, he did see some of these signs, but I can't help but think that Jesus' behavior that was quite different than anything that he had ever witnessed might have just rubbed off on him or made an impact on him. Verse 54, the centurion and those who were with him keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquakes and the things that were happening, they became frightened and they said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." Understand, yes, they were impressed at the signs, but they had never seen anyone deal with crucifixion and respond with crucifixion with such kindness and humility and meekness before. And I can't help but think that that must have made some sort of difference on them. You see, the way that we act and the way that we behave around people who aren't Christians, I think it says a lot. Over in Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, Paul encourages Christians to behave in this manner toward those who are outside. Look at what he says. And this is where we need to take our faith and go beyond and above, perhaps, the expectation. You know, Jesus gave the example back in Matthew 5. If someone wants to borrow something from you, let them have it. If someone compels you to go with them 1 mile, go with them too. If someone asks for your garment, give them your cloak also. That's the mentality that Christians are to have, to go above and beyond the expectation that others have for us. Colossians 4, verses 5 and 6, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person. Conduct yourself with wisdom toward those who are outside. That's that mentality of going above and beyond the expectation that others may have, because we just don't know the impact that they may have on them. At the same time, if we just meet that status quo and we just step up and do what it is Christians might be expected to do, probably not going to make a big difference. However, going that second mile will cause us to stand out and will allow our light and the light of the Savior to shine more brightly to those who are in darkness. Third point, we need to practice second mile Christianity in our homes, in society, and also within our church. Look at what Paul says to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I think a lot of us, and I've been there as well, and I probably am in and out more than I should be with this attitude, as I think about my work within the church and the role that I play. I understand I play a unique role, but at the same time, this is something that all of us have to be responsible for. And as Paul is writing to these saints, he's not addressing the preacher and he's not addressing the elders. He's addressing the saints and their individual roles within the congregation at Corinth. And this is what he says. He says, "My beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord." Abounding in the work of the Lord. Really appreciated Robert's invitation on Wednesday night as he talked a little bit about the expectation, and he gave a good visual illustration that helps us understand how the majority of people are really satisfied to settle for the status quo. That is just the regular expectation. And I think sometimes that can bleed into our responsibility and our work within the church. I think oftentimes we may be too content to settle for simple mediocrity, whether it be in our attendance, whether it be in our participation, whether it be in our involvement, whether it be in our zeal, or our whatever it may be. I think too many of us are willing to settle for mediocrity. You look at what Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. The Apostle Peter, as he That's going to be first. I think it's 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. You look at what he commands here, these Christians. He takes that very basic element that all who come to Christ must first have. That is faith. Everyone who comes to God must believe that he is and must believe that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. He takes that fundamental principle that everyone must have. And he says in verse 5, for this very reason, applying all diligence in your faith, supply or add moral excellence. And in your moral excellence, knowledge. And in your knowledge, self-control. And in your self-control, perseverance. And in your perseverance, godliness. And in your godliness, brotherly kindness. And in your brotherly kindness, love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For he who lacks these qualities is blind or short-sighted, having forgotten his purification from his former sins. Add to your faith. That's the cornerstone. That's the foundation. But it's not the end game. It's not the last step. It's the beginning. It's the first step. It is to be added to. And as Peter says, it's to be added to diligently. And did you notice that last statement he made? If you lack these things, if you don't add knowledge and moral excellence and self-control and perseverance and godliness and all of these other things, if you don't add these to your faith, you're short-sighted even to blindness. And get this, you have forgotten that you were purified of your former sins. It's important that we grow. It's important that we not just settle for that general average mediocrity status quo. Consider some of the athletes that we all like to watch. Some of them are probably playing football right about now, but there are thousands of people that play sports. There are thousands of people that play football and basketball and baseball. But the professional athletes that we watch on TV, they are the best. They are a cut above everyone else. Do you think they set out whenever they were preparing themselves to play professional, whatever it is? You think that they set out in mind with, I want to be a run-of-the-mill, average, mediocre NFL football player? I hardly think so. Their lifestyle demanded that they work diligently toward that goal. And their exercise and their practice and their diet and their sleep habits, everything that they did was for diligently applied for the accomplishment of their goal, whatever it might have been, playing in a professional sport. Now, or perhaps think about the job that you do at work. How much do you give yourself to your job at work? Are you one of those employees that goes the second mile? We ought to be, but are you one of those people? If you think about people that work that hard toward a perishable crown that Paul talks about, a trophy that they may be able to have and enjoy and admire and that brings them respect for the rest of their life, if you've got people that are willing to work so hard for a perishable crown, how hard should we be willing to work and how hard should we be willing to add to our faith for an imperishable crown that we are going to receive that God has it laid in store for us? What's most important to you in your life? Is it your job? Is it your spouse? Is it your kids? Is it your hobby or your education? Only you know. Now ask yourself, do I apply the same diligence to whatever is most important to me in my life? Do I apply that same diligence to my faith? Or when it comes to my faith, am I willing to settle for run-of-the-mill status quo? When it comes to attendance, are you going the second mile? When it comes to your duties, teaching class or singing or visiting or studying or just letting your light shine, are you going the second mile? When it comes to your first personal faith, your reading, your study, your meditation, your relationship with God, are you content for the status quo, prayers before meals in bed, and Bible study on Sunday and Wednesday? Jesus asked a good question in the place where we started in Matthew chapter 5, verse 47. As he was making this analogy and this comparison and encouraging his disciples to be, to go the second mile, Matthew 5, 47, 46 and 47. He said, if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet your brothers only, here's the question. What more are you doing than others?
Second mile Christianity demands that we ask, what more am I doing than others?
Not so that I can pat myself on the back or so that others can admire the work that I've done, but so that God's kingdom can be furthered.
It's not simply to outdo everyone else, but on the knowledge that when I stand before God, He's going to judge me and my heart and my actions and my effort. And that's why Paul says, you run as if nobody else was going to win, or there was only one winner and you wanted to be that winner. Are you running like there's only one prize and you're determined to win it? Or you're willing to let brother over the top over there?
He can have first. I'm fine with second or third or last, for that matter, as long as it gets me in.
We need to be willing to do more than our fair share. We need to be willing to do more than our part. Paul talks about our part in Ephesians 4:16. We won't read that. But sometimes we're called on, in Galatians chapter 6, to be a cut above, to go beyond what is easy, to go beyond what is expected.
I don't know about you, but sometimes I just have trouble doing what it is I'm expected to do. I have trouble just meeting that status quo and fulfilling the responsibilities that I've got.
In Galatians 6:2, we find a brother in a situation, a brother who's started to fall behind, a brother or sister that started to struggle in their faith, and we are called upon in those moments to demonstrate an attitude of second mile Christianity. What are you going to do if you see your brother or sister struggling? You going to pass by on the other side? You going to look away and focus on yourself? Or do you do like the Gospel Chariot song that our little kids sing about? Are you going to stop and pick them up?
Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ.
Second mile Christianity is not concerned with just me getting myself to heaven. It's concerned with me helping as many people as I can get there too.
It might take extra time that I could otherwise spend doing something else.
It might take extra money that I had in mind for something else that I wanted. It might be an inconvenience, and you know what? Second mile Christianity is going to be an inconvenience. But the one going the second mile, he doesn't care. Because as Paul says, bearing one another's burden, going the second mile fulfills the law of Christ. It's easy to get stuck in the status quo. The reality is, get this, second mile Christians are really the only Christians that Jesus is interested in seeing. Going the second mile is an effort. Back in several years ago when I was trying to stay a little bit more fit than I was, I would do these exercise programs, these exercise videos that were about an hour long. That first 30 minutes wasn't too bad. Didn't really start feeling a terrible burn. That second 30 minutes, that's where it was rough. Wore one of these calorie counters, and I watched the calories that would burn off in that first period of time, that easier portion of the workout. And it was about 25% of the calories that were burned in the second half. Going the second mile produces greater results, but it comes at a price because the second mile is much tougher to travel. Robert referenced the passage in Matthew 7:13 and 14. The walk of a Christian that God expects us to follow isn't easy, isn't broad, isn't straight necessarily, but it's challenging and it's narrow and it forces us to endure. Whenever I was finishing my master's degree, my corporate strategy, which was the capstone class, the teacher came in and he asked us at the beginning of the class, he said, what grade do you want to get? Do you want to set out in this class for an A? You want to set out in this class? Will you settle for a B? He's going to sort us into groups based off of the grade that we wanted to receive. And he said, you're going to have to put in the work for the grade that you want. So he said, you need to determine right now, what do you want? Let me ask you this evening, what kind of Christian do you want to be? Right now, make up your mind. Are you going to be one that's content to just go along with the flow, meet that 65% mediocrity, status quo? Or do you want to be a cut above? You want to be the one that goes the second mile. When Jesus was asked, what's the greatest command? Love the Lord your God
with all your heart, your soul, your strength, and your mind. Second mile Christians are the only kind that God is interested in seeing. And if you're not giving Him all, then you're not pleasing to Him. Would you come this evening if anyone realizes they don't have the devotion that they should have had in their life, the dedication, whether it be in the home, in society, within the church, whatever area of your life, if you've realized I'm not giving my best, I'm not running my hardest, would you come make that right this evening? If anyone here is not entered into that race, hasn't been baptized, believing in Jesus as the Son of God and calling on His name for the remission of sins, you can make that trip and you can start that race this evening. If anyone needs to respond to the invitation, we invite you to do so as we stand and as we sing.